Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Saturday, end of the week. We're going to be looking back at all the craziness that's been going on here. And if you're watching through the webcam, it's just starting to get a little bit light out there. Some cloudiness. We're probably going to get some scattered rain. And that'll be good because obviously when you live on an island, rain is a good thing. Now, the economy continues to dominate the news here, and I've noticed, I commented yesterday on what I'm starting to call the mother of all swindles, and other alternative journalists, economic experts are beginning to chime in on this, that this whole Geithner plan is just fraught with all kinds of possibilities for scams and ripping off the American taxpayer. I think this is Obama's No Banker Left Behind plan that he's got going there. And as we talked about yesterday, one of the worst aspects of this whole situation is the return to the mark-to-market accounting system. And this is a set of accounting rules which have been revived and allowed to be legal, which allow the banks and financial industries to decide for themselves what their assets are worth. They're no longer bound by what the current market value is of what they're holding. They can come up with whatever justification they can say. We believe that a year from now, this asset will be worth much more money. Therefore, we're carrying it on the books today as being worth that much money, and so forth and so on. And of course, the potential for abuse is incredibly obvious. It was the mark-to-market accounting system that led to the overvaluation and eventual collapse of Enron and the subsequent demise of the Arthur Andersen accounting firm that was doing the books for Enron and helping them along with this huge scam. So what we have is a situation where all these banks can take the assets that were considered toxic. We've heard them screaming for months on end about how these toxic assets are holding down their balance sheets. They can now revalue them and say, oh, all of a sudden we have decided they're worth 5 or 10 times what we thought they were worth before, which all of a sudden means their bottom line is now back in the black, which may explain a little bit of the stock run-up that we saw this last week. Then they can go ahead, turn around, and sell these assets at a loss for pennies on the dollar. Then they go back to Geithner and say, you know, you said you were going to partner with us as we cleared up this backlog of these toxic assets, and we just took a $5 million loss here, and you've got to help us out. And Geithner will say, well, here's 85% of that $5 million loss, and they go away happy because that $5 million loss is all on paper because they decided for themselves what the asset was worth. As a result of this development, we're getting word that banks, Citibank and Bank of America, and specifically, they're out there grabbing as many toxic assets as they can because they know they're going to be able to turn them around and reap a huge profit on them, all on the backs of the American taxpayer. This is the mother of all scams. And the bottom line is, if you look at what mark-to-market did to Enron, we're going to see the same thing happen here in the United States. It's not a system that can work for very long when everybody's overvaluing assets. At some place, there's going to be another crisis. So they'll crank up those printing presses again on the backs of the taxpayer, and they'll just keep shoveling money at this. This is the doorway to the hyperinflation that we saw in the Weimar Republic, where it took an entire basket of money to buy a loaf of bread. People were burning the money because it was cheaper than buying firewood with that same money to put in the stoves. Now, the other proposal that we're seeing this last week is they're talking about a mandatory health insurance. We saw 2 weeks ago where Barack Obama was talking about ordering or requiring all serving military troops to pay for their own health insurance to cover combat-related injuries. Now, they backed off from that one because of the huge public outcry and anger that resulted from that. Now they're talking about mandated health insurance for everybody. Now, I'm one of those people who thinks health insurance is a good thing. We carry policies here on my lady love and I, and it's a nice thing to have, except it's hideously expensive. and the insurance companies then get to decide what you can and cannot have done for your health care, especially in conjunction with HMOs. It's one of the reasons the quality of American health care has deteriorated. But they're pushing this mandated health insurance program for everybody on the excuse that this is going to make the market function better, and it's going to reduce premium costs for everyone, so we will get more health care for less money. And it sounds really good, but I am one of those people who is old enough to remember when auto insurance was made mandatory. There was actually a time long ago when auto insurance was something that was optional. You know, if you bought it and you had it, you were covered for accidents. If you didn't have it and you got in an accident, there was a lot of trouble. And I actually had my very first car that I ever owned. Heathcliff was a little Volkswagen Beetle. And when I got him, all four fenders were different colors. And just about the time I finally got around to painting them all the same color, I got hit by a Chevy whose owner did not have insurance, and they basically skipped town, and I had to eat the cost of burying the first car and buying the second one. So a lot of people said, oh, yeah, good thing if everybody has auto insurance, and because everybody has it, it'll amortize the losses, and prices will go down and quality would go up. Well, the reverse happened. Once auto insurance became mandatory, premiums just went right through the roof, and payouts went down, and it turned into a huge, huge profit industry. And every time I hear where the government is going to solve the health care crisis by forcing us to buy our own insurance, it seems to me like the real goal is the forcing us to buy part, and everything else is kind of secondary. Okay, we're going to stop talking about events. We've got a guest joining us on the phone from Israel. Is Sasha and Solanas from the International Solidarity Movement. And Sasha, thank you very much for joining us on the phone today. And how are things there? How's Tristan Anderson doing right now?
Well, Tristan is a little bit better right now compared to before. I mean, he was hit in the head with a high-velocity tear gas projectile. From about 60 meters, the army was shooting in a way that was illegal by their own standards, the tear gas. And he did have three brain surgeries, but the doctors are hopeful right now of him recovering. Of course, we don't know what that recovery will look like because he had a large portion of his right frontal lobe removed, in addition to possibly losing one of his eyes. And he's still listed as under critical condition.
Well, I want to go back to this issue about the use and deployment of tear gas, because obviously these canisters are not intended or designed to actually be fired at people. It is supposed to be just thrown into an area to disperse the people. And whether or not Israel was even justified in using tear gas on what was, as I understand it, a peaceful demonstration in the first place, and it just betrays a certain recklessness and callous disregard for life, which is no surprise to anybody who saw what was going on during Operation Cast Lead. But it seems like Israel, you know, almost doesn't even seem to care how bad situations like Tristan Anderson or Rachel Corey look to the rest of the world. They just stand there and say, yeah, we did it. So what? Who cares? You know, nobody's going to complain about Israel except those darned anti-Semites and Jew haters and all that other stuff around the world. And there's almost an arrogance that Israel feels they can just sort of do this and get away with it, and it doesn't matter what the rest of the world thinks about them.
Extremely so. I mean, the condition in Nailin since Tristan was shot, it hasn't calmed down. The demonstrations, I was there just last Friday, or just this Friday, And there was a military incursion. Of course, the demonstrations are not completely nonviolent. There is stone throwing, and it is unfair to portray Palestinians as just victims. Their land is occupied, and they do respond to that occupation by throwing stones. However, they do pose no threat with their stone throwing. It's not the soldiers are shooting from too far a distance to possibly get injured. They have, you know,
it's a very one-sided situation. Sasha, we got to take a break here for some commercials. Please stay on the line. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Joining us on the phone from Israel is Sasha, coffee hasn't kicked in this morning, Sasha Solanas from the International Solidarity Movement. We're talking about the continuing occupation of Palestinian lands, the continued encroachment on their property, theft of their property by Israel, the inevitable protest. And this is one of the things that has been so remarkable about reading the coverage of this this dispute, if as it were, in the corporate American media, because it's always portrayed that the Palestinians are just being gauche to object to having their lands continually appropriated, co-opted, annexed by the Israeli government, and that somehow they are in the wrong for not liking the situation.
Yeah, unfortunately, the American media, and, well, most big media anywhere, doesn't really portray the Palestinian struggle in a fair way. Palestinians, especially any time that you read about Palestinians in the newspapers or see it on television, you see their violence, you hear that there was stone throwing, you don't ever get the context that it is a response to the occupation. And according to the UN, I mean, according to the Geneva Accords, legitimate struggle, resistance against occupation is perfectly legal under international law. But portrayed as, most Palestinians are portrayed as terrorists or as people who dislike the Jewish population, which is just extremely untrue. I mean, I am actually Jewish, and mm-hmm. I live in Palestine, and I work in Palestine, and I have never personally felt uncomfortable or personally felt persecuted or discriminated against for being Jewish.
Well, yeah, we're dealing with the actions of a political government, not with the people. And I think the consensus of opinion, at least certainly among the people who read my website here, is that the world's Jewish people, and by the way, Rivero's a Sephardic name, so, you know, I'm coming out of, I'm not religiously Jewish, but I come out of that genetic background. But I think the consensus opinion is that the world's Jewish people are not really responsible for the crimes of the government of Israel any more than the American people are really responsible for the crimes of, say, the Bush administration, any more than Muslims as a whole are responsible for the crimes of Al-Qaeda, whoever they turn out to be. Well, you know, people are able to get along with each other just fine. It's when you get these governments that start saying, no, no, we are supposed to own this, and we're supposed to own that. And the other government says, no, 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 we've got holy documents that say we own that. And it just, it escalates from there. And the people who are creating these conflicts are not the ones who, unfortunately, are made to suffer in these conflicts. But as you say, getting back to the American media, the perception that is trying to be manufactured is that Israel is right to be there. The Palestinians don't have a right to be there. What was it, the Golden Year used to say? They didn't really exist to begin with. Now, the good news is, from where I'm sitting, we are seeing, certainly within the United States, I don't know about the rest of the world, but within the United States, the corporate media is in a major decline. Every week that goes by, we hear of more newspapers having to close. We hear of more TV news departments having to let staff go. Their ad revenues are down. Their viewership is down. And I think this Palestinian bias is a big reason that the corporate media has discredited itself in the eyes of the world, because the world understands, I think, much better than we're being told, what the real issues are in Palestine. You know, Israel came in.
Especially since Gaza. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the bottom line is, everybody says it would make sense, you know, to have a two-state solution. I know a lot of people say Israel shouldn't be there to begin with because the Palestinians had nothing to do with whatever happened in World War II. I think just as pragmatism, I think, you know, Israel has to have a place and the Palestinians have to have a place. What the world is seeing is that every time there's a move toward creating a two-state solution, it is Israel that tries to block it. Israel clearly wants it all, or the Israeli government clearly wants it all, and people are realizing, you know, we're going to identify with the underdog on this. And so I think this Palestinian situation, the way it's being reported in the corporate media, is a big reason why the corporate media is losing their audience now. Because ordinary people in the street, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, we're inherently fair human beings. We have an instinct for fairness among our fellow human beings. Yes, there are criminals, and most of them, hopefully, we can lock them up in the Congress building and throw away the key. But ordinary people in the street, the doctors, the teachers, the bakers, the bricklayers, we're by nature pretty much altruistic and honest. And we're going to side with this situation where we see the Palestinians who've been living on that land for all this time, and they're losing their homes, they're having walls driven through their farmland, their olive groves are being destroyed, and anybody who's a farm kid, as I am, you understand how long it takes an olive tree to grow before you're going to get a crop off of it. And you know, a lot of people don't understand this idea of bringing an olive branch with you as an offering of peace. What the symbolism is, because it takes so long for that olive branch to be turned into a fruit-bearing tree, that it means peace for a long time is what that symbolism means. And so, you know, we're seeing these farms being destroyed. And these are harmless people if they were being left alone. It's not like the Palestinians really get up every morning and saying, oh, there's nothing good on TV, I'm going to go bomb a school bus or something like that. They are clearly the invaded, attacked people. And so I think the corporate media really is discrediting itself. It's delegitimizing itself. The bias has become too obvious. And once that happens and people start to notice it, you know, I think we're really approaching the end of the time when the corporate media really can continue to sell this particular perception to the rest of the world, because it isn't working anymore. That's why our readership and our viewership is up, even as the newspapers continue to close. And I think obviously that has to be good news for the Palestinian people.
I certainly hope so. A big part of the struggle in Palestine, it's about the international community recognizing what's happening here. You know, as ISM, part of our role is to come here and to be in solidarity with Palestinians, to support them in their nonviolent actions, to be a part of them. But another big role is to go to our home countries and to speak about what we saw. And if the international community starts to be more honest with itself about the realities on the ground, what's happening, how the Israeli government is stealing farmers' lands, is appropriating homes, like in East Jerusalem right now, there are 28 families in one neighborhood, 88 families in another neighborhood, that are all slated to be evicted from their homes and have their homes demolished. And so as soon as the international community starts to see the reality on the ground, the facts on the ground that Israel is so good at creating in building infrastructure in the West Bank, and really negating the possibility for a two-state solution, because the way that it is right now, Israel is building settlements at a very fast pace, never stopped building settlements, despite many unilateral agreements between Israel and the United States.
Okay, well, Sasha, we got to take another break here. Hold on the phone. We're going to come back for one more segment after these words from our sponsors. And we'll be right back with Sasha Solanas and the International Solidarity Movement.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Sasha Solanas from the International Solidarity Movement. She is in Israel right now. And I want to lead off this segment, first of all, by backing up and saying that if it were not for the international solidarity movement, I think a lot of people would not be aware of what's going on in Palestine. I know there's a lot of people working on this situation. There's that wonderful website of AmericansOnlyKnew.org, and of course we carry a lot of this stuff at WhatReallyHappened.com. But I think ISM has definitely become a major focus and sort of a framework for organization in terms of collecting together information, disseminating it out to the public. And so it's definitely just a very important group of people, and what you do is it's certainly key and critical to understanding the situation. Now, getting back to what you were saying about Jerusalem, I have been many times over the list of United Nations resolutions in which Israel's government is repeatedly told Jerusalem is supposed to be a shared city. It's supposed to be an international city. It is not the capital of Israel. And yet Israel continues to defy the United Nations on this. And, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that we were sold a war in Iraq because those dastardly Iraqis were defying the United Nations. And again, this is one of these hypocrisies and double standards that is calling attention to itself, where the public is saying, how come it's one set of rules for these people and another completely different set of rules for those people over there? And, you know, and getting back to these home demolitions in East Jerusalem, some of the excuses given for why these people must be forced to leave their homes is just absolutely silly. I think one of the ones that really called attention to itself involved a claim that these properties did not have proper building permits issued by the Israeli government, which was kind of amazing because the people had been living in these homes since before the nation of Israel was even founded.
Exactly. A lot of the homes that are getting demolished right now, the excuse that the Israeli government is giving is that their building permits, they don't have building permits after 1967. So you have a lot of homes that were built before Israel illegally annexed, illegally occupied East Jerusalem. And so it would be impossible for them to have building permits, but that does not stop the Israeli government. And unfortunately, the reality of the situation, even when Palestinians do organize in a completely nonviolent way, for instance, this week there's a cultural festival that goes around Arabic countries, and this week is Jerusalem, the host city is Jerusalem, and so it's a week-long event of celebrating Arab culture, celebrating Palestinian culture. And it was completely shut down by the Israeli government. Over 30 have already been arrested for participating and organizing cultural events. At the same time, you have Baruch Mazel, who is an extreme right-wing Israeli, marching in Umm al-Sam, which is a primarily Arab village in Israel proper, getting the necessary permits. Of course, the government gave him the necessary permits to march in a purely Arab town, and his entire politics is that he wants the end of Arabs. He doesn't want Arab people. He doesn't want Palestinians inside Israel. And so the double standards are through the roof.
Yeah, it is. It's a hideous double standard. And we see this consistent thread of Israel attempting to deny that there is a Palestinian people and a Palestinian culture. What was that phrase they used? A land without a people for a people without a land. Yeah, the whole idea was there wasn't really anybody of any note when Israel took over that particular piece of real estate. And, of course, that's completely false. I mean, we've documented all these historical maps that show Palestine, going back for hundreds and hundreds of years. One of the most poignant stories for me, and I've gone back to it many times here at What Really Happened, and I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but some years back, one of the Palestinian cultural groups organized a traveling exhibit of Palestinian embroidery, which is really quite amazing to look at. And it was a touring exhibit to go around the world to show these wonderful traditional Palestinian costumes with their wonderful craft work on them. And I believe it was at the Los Angeles airport where this traveling exhibit simply vanished. And nobody knew where it went or what had happened to it. And it was just this very smug situation of, well, no exhibit, no Palestinian culture. And very, very suspicious circumstances how this entire crate of these costumes could simply vanish from a secured baggage transfer area. It wasn't like it had been checked out of the airport and was out in the general public. It was in the control of the bag. It was a stopover flight. They'd come into L.A. They were heading up, I think, to either Seattle or Alaska. It was on. It was a change over to Alaska Airways, and somehow the entire crate just vanished. And you know, I mean, what a heartbreak for all those people who, first of all, worked on those costumes, and second, really put together this exhibit to try and reach out to the world and say, we have a cultural identity. And, you know, there's this very clear situation of Israel wanting to erase Palestine from the map. Israel's always screaming, these people want to erase us from the map, these people want to erase us from the map. It's Israel that's erasing Palestine from the map and trying to erase their culture. And then, you know, we find out that, you know, Israel's relics that prove the existence of the first temple are all forgeries. And it's like this constant set of attempting to create a new reality and then shove it at us through the corporate media. I think people are really reacting to it. And remember what I said in the other segment about I think the corporate media has lost its credibility because of the way they handle the Palestinian issue. I think that's a big reason that Israel's Operation Cast Lead really turned into a public relations disaster, because they really went into that thinking they were going to be able to continue controlling the perceptions of the world with what Israel was doing in Gaza. And it just blew up in their faces. They're still reeling from this and trying to react, and they're mounting these very expensive ad campaigns to try and rebuild Israel's image. But I think it's the fact that the media-consuming public around the world was turning off the big networks and the newspapers, and they were coming to get their news here on the internet, the blogs. They were going to International Solidarity Movement's websites. I know you guys were getting a huge amount of traffic. And they were finding out what they needed to know. And the alternative media here at GCN, the various blogs, we're already pulling more of an audience than the traditional newspapers and the traditional radio stations, and we're catching up on the TV news. And so the trend is really very much there. And I think future historians are going to look back at the evolution of the media at this time, and they're going to say this constant choosing of sides, this constant heavy bias in the Israeli-Palestinian issue is going to be a big part of what brought the corporate media down.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. But in terms of Operation Cast Lead, it's not just that Israel was talking about getting rid of a Palestinian identity and a Palestinian culture. You actually have Vilnai, who's the deputy defense minister, saying that we will bring a Shoah upon the Palestinian people, which is, of course, a Hebrew reference to the Holocaust. And you have several Israeli officials who talked about the Operation Cast Lead, the massacres of Gaza, as a Holocaust on the Gazan people, which is, unfortunately, as we saw, entirely true. There are over 1,300 dead, most of them already claimed as civilians. And so it's not just that Israel's trying to get rid of a Palestinian identity and a Palestinian culture. Israel is actually trying to get rid of the Palestinian people themselves.
It's ethnic cleansing.
I'm sorry, what?
I said it's ethnic cleansing.
Right. You have an ethnic cleansing of Gaza. You have an ethnic cleansing of East Jerusalem, with most people being kicked out of their homes with nowhere to go. And unfortunately, you know, something that, according to international law, should happen, the right of return is never going to be implemented, according to Israel, even though you have millions of refugees from Palestine who were kicked out by rogue terrorist groups. You know, we talk about terrorism just from the Palestinian side, but no one recognizes the terrorism that came from the Israeli side with the creation of Israel and the destruction of Palestine.
Well, I'll tell you, if I saw one of those big bulldozers coming at me, I'd be pretty terrorized. Sasha, we got to take one more break. When we come back, I'd like you to tell us, what can we do to help? What can we do to help ISM? What should we be doing to try and maybe end U.S. support for these crimes against the Palestinians? We'll be right back.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Sasha Solanas, International Solidarity Movement, on the phone with us from Israel. Sasha, thank you again for taking time to speak with us today about what's going on. I'm watching the chat room here at whatreallyhappened.com, and people are just saying, you know, it's so refreshing to hear a voice from somebody who's actually there, who's actually taking part in what's going on. We're not dealing with all the layers and layers of filters that we normally experience in getting reports from that part of the world. So what is ISM going to be doing in the future? What can people do to help get the word out?
You can visit our website at www.palsolidarity.com. And we post all of our information, all of the things that we're doing. You can either donate to us or join us in Palestine. It's very, but more importantly, it's to get the information, to read what's happening in this part of the world, to find out for yourselves what the situation actually is.
Okay.
That's the best way that people can help.
Would you kindly respell that URL again?
Sure. It's www.palsolidarity.org.
Okay.
PalSolidarity.org.
All right. I'm going to put that up from my website, whatreallyhappened.com, right now. I have linked to that site many, many times in the past to keep things going there. And if I had the means, I'd love to join you in Palestine. I've never seen that part of the world. And obviously, it seems like this one little piece of the planet is almost dominating the rest of the world in terms of its political influence. And again, this is not an issue of hating one particular group of people or not. It's an issue of fairness, and everybody should have a place to live and call their own. And especially when you have one group of people going in, and this is also a condemnation of the holy crusades that we saw throughout the Middle Ages, where somebody says, our God says we own this particular piece of the land, and therefore we're going to go in and kill the people already sitting on it and take it away from them. And the reality, of course, was money. The so-called holy lands are a key trade route around the Mediterranean, and at that time, owning that piece of land, and setting up toll roads was just an incredible source of wealth, and that's a big reason why that is one of the most hotly contested pieces of ground on Earth. But with modern shipping and airplanes, that's not a factor anymore, and it just seems, waving religious texts at each other as an excuse to kill each other, I mean, it strikes me as something the human race should have grown out of by now, and it is a shame that it has not. And like I said before, I think people are basically, by nature, they're fair, they're honest. They think everybody should have a right to live in peace on this planet. And right now the Palestinians don't have that through no fault of their own. They're just living on the place where their ancestors have lived for 1,000 years. And an outsider has come in claiming a right to their land and a right to kick them off the land. And I know a lot of people, I get a lot of very irate letters from people who support Israel and say, well, you Americans did it to the Native Americans, to the Indians and stuff. And said, yeah, we did. But you know something? I wasn't alive back then. I wasn't in a position to do anything about what happened to the American Indians. I wasn't even alive and in a position to do anything about what happened in World War II. But I am alive today. And there are problems and crimes and genocides taking place today. And I can and have a moral obligation to do something about it, what is happening today. And, again, Sasha, thank you very, very much for taking time with us today. We have about another 5 minutes. Is there anything else you want to say to our listeners?
Well, I mean, the reality on the ground is it's not just East Jerusalem and Gaza. There's an apartheid wall that's being built where Tristan Anderson was shot. He was shot after a demonstration in Nailin. And Nailin is the apartheid wall is a contentious issue that the American government still doesn't recognize that the International Court of Justice declared this wall illegal in 2004, and they continue to build it despite its illegality. And the American population, the American government, does not recognize that it was declared illegal. So it's important to recognize that it's not just the ethnic cleansing of East Jerusalem, the siege on Gaza, it's in the West Bank too. Israel is saying that they want a two-state solution, but they're making it physically impossible for there to be a two-state solution by carving up pieces of the West Bank that they intend to keep, and by continually building settlements and bypass roads that are used only by Israelis, that Palestinians have no right to drive on. And so this, what we hear from the Israeli side about the desire for a two-state solution, the desire for peace, the facts on the ground dictate that they do not want that. They want to continue to take the land that they want. And what is left, whatever's created, these bantustans of Palestine, that is what will be left for the Palestinians. And Israel is making it impossible, absolutely impossible, for there to be one contiguous state. And so until the American public takes a stand and speaks out about the ethnic cleansing, about the stealing of land, about the building of this apartheid wall, we won't see Israel change their policy, unfortunately. It's up to the international community to voice their protests and to be in opposition to what Israel is doing.
Well, I have a message to my American listeners here, and it's one that might have a little bit more resonance. As our economy continues to deteriorate and our government has added $40,000 in tax debt to every living American in the last 6 months alone, you need to keep in mind that everything Israel is doing, whether it's building the apartheid wall or dropping white phosphorus all over the Gaza schools, we're being forced to pay for it. You are paying for that white phosphorus. You are paying for that cement. You are paying for those bulldozers that knock down the Palestinian homes. Now, if you are one of those people who thinks that gun manufacturers ought to be held to blame for the crimes committed with the guns they manufacture, then we, the American people, share the guilt for the genocide being committed against the Palestinian people. And if that doesn't make you angry enough to stand up and do something about it, there is something wrong with you. And that is my message to the American listeners on this very this topic. Sasha, a final time, thank you very much for joining us on the air. We're going to have you or some other representatives of your organization back on the show in the very, very near future. Because, as I said, I think we're reaching a point where the global community and even the American community, they're realizing the extent to which corporate media has been lying to them about this issue and making them party to these horrendous ongoing modern crimes. And I think it's going to come to a stop. We had a report this last week. I don't know if you regret it or not. Our CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, is predicting that Israel will be gone in less than 20 years because they simply cannot sustain the level of oppression that they're committing against other countries. You know, their finances are in a complete ruin despite all the billions of dollars they're getting from various countries around the world because they take and they take. They don't give back. They don't produce much of anything that they can sell. And they're not going to hold together much longer if they keep up this belligerency with their neighbors. Sooner or later, something bad is going to happen. And the wrong people are going to be made to pay the price for all of this arrogance.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. Hopefully we can continue to take a step towards ending the apartheid system that Israel has, towards justice for Palestinians.
Absolutely agree. Thank you very much. All right. That was Sasha Solanas from the International Solidarity Movement. They are a wonderful organization, and they're interested in balance. That's all they want. Nobody's talking about go kill these people or go stone these people or whatever. They just want balance and fairness in the world, and I think 90% of the human population wants exactly the same thing. There's that other 10% that runs for elected office that get votes and money by saying, oh, no, we're going to go take this away from these people and give it to our supporters over here, which we're certainly seeing in Wall Street these last 6 months. It's just more of the same, just on a national level. But ISM, definitely take a look. I'm putting up some of these links at whatreallyhappened.com today so you can come in and take a look. And we do link to ISM on a pretty much regular basis. And as you know, we have a lot of our own links regarding the situation in Israel. We've even had the name whatreallyhappened.com painted on the apartheid wall and with some sentiments there. And I'll put that picture up there for you to look at during the news break. All right. We're at the end of hour one. We're going to take a break here for some commercials and for some newscasts. We'll be back here in about 7 minutes. Until then, stay safe, be well. Aloha, America. We'll be right back.
Welcome
to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to hour two of our show today. And a shout out to all the affiliates who join us for the second hour. If you're looking through the studio webcam, the sun is up, the sky is light, the chat room is open, all systems are going, we're ready to rock and roll full tilt boogie for freedom and justice and what we used to call the American way. Now, if you were with us for hour one, we were talking with Sasha Solanas of the International Solidarity Movement, and I made a comment there, and over the break I was thinking about it, and the more I think about it, the more I think there is really some validity to this. And the comment was that over the last several years, the corporate American media, and indeed the corporate media of many other countries, has actually destroyed its own credibility by continuing to present a highly and obviously biased representation of the situation in Israel and Palestine. And I think that this is a big reason why Operation Cast Lead turned out to be the public relations disaster that it was, because Israel went into Gaza with the white phosphorus and the cluster bombs and the dime weapons and all the rest of that stuff, absolutely convinced that they were still in control of the perceptions of the rest of the world by virtue of their control over the corporate media. And it blew up in their faces. And they're still trying to recover from that. And so I think this is a watershed moment. Because we had last week the Rockefellers were saying the Internet is the biggest threat to national security we've ever faced. And they're trying to categorize it that the threat is from outsiders who will use the Internet against the government. But what is really at issue, I believe, is that the government realizes finally, all these years after the fact, that they've lost the ability to effectively lie to the people. And if they cannot lie to the people, they cannot control the people. They cannot trick them. They cannot use them. They cannot manipulate them. They cannot manufacture consent to various government agendas. And we're going to see, I think, now an escalation of attacks on the Internet itself. In fact, over the break, I happened to turn back to MSNBC. They are rerunning this show they did from some months back about child sexual predators on the Internet, where they set up a sting operation. I mean, they couldn't go to court with any of this stuff, I don't think, because it would be considered entrapment. No, they've got a guy in handcuffs, so I guess they did. But the bottom line is we're going to see the corporate media is out to bash the Internet. Every time another newspaper closes, every time another news department has to let people go, they're always wringing their hands about all those blogs. They're just wrecking it for us and everything like that. Well, you know, we wouldn't be here if there wasn't a need. It's not like I sat down here, actually in Los Angeles, 16 years ago, and said, you know, I think I'm just going to, like, destroy my own career in the film industry so I can sit here and post stories about things the corporate media isn't covering anymore. There was a need because I saw crimes happening right before my eyes that were not being reported. And like any other decent citizen, and it really was, it was a murder. I saw evidence of a murder made to look like a suicide. I tried to do the right thing, went to law enforcement, went to the FBI, went to the media with it, and all heck broke loose, to put it mildly. And that was where WhatReallyHappened.com came from. And that same story has been repeated hundreds and thousands of times of ordinary Americans of good moral character realizing that we're being lied to and feeling that need that they've got to do something about it. If the corporate media was really doing its job of a check and balance on government abuse, which was the reason they were given the First Amendment in the first place, the blogs wouldn't be here. Nobody would waste time with us. Because the corporate media would be telling the news that the people need to hear. If the corporate media had said to everybody, look, Bush is lying to you about Saddam's nuclear weapons. They're not really there. He's just trying to trick you into war. If they had done that, we, the alternative media, would not be here today. There would be no need for us. We are a symptom of the deterioration in the trustworthiness of the American corporate media, and that's where we are. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Tony in British Columbia. Aloha, Tony. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Oh, I was just wanted to make a couple of comments or some observations I've come or conclusions I've come to with regard to the Israeli situation there.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that this whole Israeli, in fact, it goes back to the setting up of the Israeli state. I think that was basically set up as a program dialectic, you know, to basically, you know, do the old confrontation between Muslims and Israel, or the Jewish. And I actually think it's I think Israel is being set up, or has been set up, and will be sacrificed, in a sense, because the people that are running it, you know, you talked about the different factions of Jews, like the Sephardics and the Caucasians.
Mm.
I honestly think that the people that are running the show are basically, you know, the Rothschilds, the banksters, you know, and these guys are out of Europe, and they set up Europe to, or set up Israel to basically create a conflict and, you know, in a sense, destroy or go after kind of like the Muslim culture as a whole. And I think that Israel is destined to be sacrificed.
Well, I would disagree. I would disagree. I think the goal of the people who are behind the foundation of Israel is to get the Christians and the Muslims to kill each other off and get them out of the way of Israel. Now, as far as the creation of Israel itself, Israel, as originally put together by the United Nations partition plan, was supposed to start out as two separate nations, one for Israel, one for Palestine. It was Israel's leadership who said, we reject the creation of a Palestinian state. We don't recognize they have a right to exist, but we declare Israel in existence today. That's what David Ben-Gurion did. The UN partition plan was never actually implemented. Basically, David Ben-Gurion said, well, the United Nations recognizes that we're supposed to be here, so we're here, but we refuse to recognize Palestine. So all of this unpleasantness, all of this unhappiness that we have had to watch and pay for the last 60-odd years is because Israel demands for itself that which they refuse to grant to Palestine. And that is really the core of the issue. If Israel would give to Palestine exactly what Israel wants Palestine to give back, a recognition of a right to exist, none of these wars would have happened. The rest of the Arab nations in the Middle East would gladly accept Israel's right to exist as long as Israel recognizes their right to exist. We have had countries like Iran and Syria and Lebanon have all repeatedly stated, if Israel will simply say that Palestine has a right to a state, they'll all recognize Israel and they'll stop making bombs and they'll start making products to sell back and forth and everybody will go back to a life of happy commerce, which is the way it's really supposed to be, I think. So that is really the core of the problem. Is again, it's a hypocrisy and a double standard on the part of Israel's government.
Well, I don't disagree with you in your analysis of the situation. You're absolutely correct. I'm just saying that the people that are calling the shots, basically, they're not really of the Jewish faith.
No, faith is for the masses. Faith is for the masses. Religion gets in the way of the leadership. It's just
a tool. Right, and if you want to bring in a new world order, you basically have to, you know, destroy the Muslim culture as a whole. So you need somebody to go after them. You know, and the way that events have unfolded in the recent history shows that these guys have basically no disregard for world opinion. They have there's no sort of, how should we say, moral restraint in any any form at all. And it seems to me that, you know, Israel, any state that basically holds those as main tenets is untenable. I mean, Israel itself, I mean, they don't have water. Their whole situation there is just falling apart big time. And I don't think that's by accident.
Well, it's an artifact of their continued belligerency with their neighbors, because, again, going back, if they'd said, okay, Palestine's here, Israel's here, they could have made deals across the border to get water from the Litani River. They would not have to be spending so much of our money on constant military preparation. They could have put the money instead into infrastructure development. Instead of pouring money into that weapons lab underneath the Dimona reactor, they could be drilling wells in the desert. I mean, one of the reasons they're short of water is the groundwater around Dimona is now radioactively contaminated. And,
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just goes on.
I was just saying, it's kind of like, I put it to kind of a comparison to the situation where you create the creation of communism. You know, and putting that up against, say, Germany in World War II.
Okay, well, it's funny you would bring that up. Actually, we got to take a break here. Tony, hang on. I want to keep you through the break into the next segment because you are really, really close to what is going on behind the scenes here. So we're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We're going to be back with Tony, then with Redbeard in Texas, after these words from our sponsors.
This
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. The phone lines are loading up, so we're going to have to be fast here. Tony, we were talking last segment about the New World Order or the clash of civilizations, and you were talking about the Muslims being a target on one side and the declared war against Germany in 1933, and the two are actually related because when you get past all the rhetoric and the flag waving and the holy writ and all the rest of it, what we're talking about here is a clash between banking systems. On one side, you have the compound interest lending, usury kind of banking system, which has caused so much economic strife and indeed has triggered a couple of wars over the last several hundred years. And then on the other side, you have the Muslim system of banking, where there is a flat fee for lending, and there is no compounding of interest. And people around the world are waking up and realizing that the Islamic banks seem to be doing very well during the so-called global crisis. They avoided these pitfalls. They avoided these traps. It's designed out of their approach to the way they're lending money. Now, the situation in Germany, what Germany did, what Adolf Hitler did that so annoyed the rest of the world is he dropped the debt-based central bank system that the Weimar Republic had been forced to adopt at the close of World War I, that had just subjected the German people to hideous amounts of inflation and financial oppression to try and deal with the war reparations. And as we've said many times on the show before, the problem with a debt-based central bank currency, such as we have in the United States, is the instant the system goes into effect, more money is owed than is actually in existence. So either you have to keep on finding new borrowers to come to the system, or you have to make a profit from your overseas commerce, or you have to invade and conquer somebody's wealth in order to pay off the debts that have accumulated from this system. So when they talk about clash of civilizations, it's two different banking systems at war with each other. The New World Order is a goal to bring the entire planet underneath a Federal Reserve-type system, guaranteeing the economic enslavement of all the world's people from now on. That's really what they're talking about at this point.
Well, that's part of what I was trying to get at. I mean, in Europe, you had Russia created by, you know, the banksters. Basically, their plan at that time was to use Russia and to provoke a conflict with Europe. You destroy the whole system, and then you come back and you recreate it the way they recreate it the way that they wanted to. And I'm saying that the same sort of program is being enacted in the Middle East right now, using Israel as kind of like the Russia going after the Muslims, where, you know, you go in there, you destroy the whole thing, and you come back in and take over, control everybody, the people, the resources, everything. And the main point, though, of course, is saying that these guys, the banksters, as I call them, you know, what they're doing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict just shows their mindset, and this is what they've got planned for America. And that's kind of like my point.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, Tony. We're going to have to let you go here because the phone lines are loading up. We're going to switch to Redbeard in Texas. Aloha, Redbeard. Avast me hearties. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, nothing much. Just another political pirate sprouting out of this globalization economy.
Okay.
I am what you would probably call an economic slave. I'm a waiter at a very high-volume restaurant, and I and my family are feeling this economic blow probably harder than most at this time. I went from right before Hurricane Ike making around $2,500 a month waiting tables to this month I've only made $1,100.
Ouch.
I have a 2-year-old son that just had his birthday last Sunday. And, you know, there's just not enough money to go around for everything that I have to do. But on the Israel side of things, I would like to comment. I've recently watched the movie Ring of Power. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Yes.
And I want to know your opinion on what they talk about as far as the extreme Zionists. And I also have a question about why we haven't heard as much about our Vice President Joe Biden and the fact that he is a Zionist. Yeah, there's there's so much going on, and it's just, I feel like it's time for everybody to stand up and start asking the relevant questions.
Absolutely agree with you on that last one. Now, first of all, when they talk about extreme Zionists, it is important, you know, what I was saying before to Tony there,
yes.
The real issue is we're in a war of banking systems.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more on that. You know, I've gone to handling all my own cash.
Yeah.
I have zero money in banks. I have outstanding debts that are up my eyeballs that are never going to get paid, and I'm saying that right now because I'm never going to pay those pirates for the money that they're stealing from me. Student loan debt. You know, they went from a 9% interest rate to a 17% interest rate in a matter of 6 months on me.
Yeah.
You know, it's highway robbery, and my debt went from $17,000 to a little over 40 right now in a matter of the last 2 years. You know, just for non-payment and simply for student loans, nothing else. I don't really know how far to go with it because, you know, the young people that I work with that are all around me, they're acting like sheep. You know, I say stuff to my coworkers all the time about how we need to stand up and, you know, start asking questions and start doing something and stand up for our own rights that are laid out in the Constitution and our own Bill of Rights. And I get ridiculed for it. And, you know, it's just along the side of the three steps of truth. You know, you go through the ridicule, you go through the persecution, and then you go through the acceptance.
We're kind of at the persecution stage right now.
Yes.
And there are people who are in denial. We are raised from birth to have a certain perception of our
Absolutely.
Government and our leadership. And because we're indoctrinated with this at a very, very young age, it becomes literally part of our personality. And so anybody who's seen as attacking the government, it's perceived by the mind as an attack on the person.
Absolutely.
On their identity. And you have to be very, very careful when you criticize the government, where you need to talk about the individuals in the government. And that way it's seen as less of a personal attack. But there's a lot of denial out there. People don't want to believe what's happening in front of their eyes because then they got
to
face that choice.
Exactly.
Am I going
to
do something about it?
Stand up and make a decision.
That's exactly right. That's what's going on there.
Yeah.
Now, to get back to your earlier issues here, and by the way, believe me, I empathize with the situation you're going through. We're getting that from everybody across the country.
Absolutely.
They're being forced to take jobs for less and less money. Meanwhile, the interest on their existing loans and credit lines and student loans is just being jacked up to extreme heights. It is an unwinnable situation. We're being crushed down into total abject poverty so that the banks can get out of their gambling debts is really
Absolutely.
What it comes down to. And it's not going to stop until the people make it stop. We just have to wait. It's going to happen eventually. I mean, two weeks before the Romanian Revolution, anybody looking at the country would have said, well, you know, they're being treated like crud, but they seem to be okay with it. And then 2 weeks later, Ceausescu was machine gunned to death on Romanian national TV, and that was kind of the end of that situation. But to get back to what you're talking about with extremism for religious or political reasons is the cover for the real agenda, which, as I said before, it's a war of banking systems. The people who run the Federal Reserve-type banking system want to encapsulate the whole world in that kind of debt-based economy and so that we'll all be slaves to the bankers for the rest of our lives. Other people want to say no. Redbeard, we got to let you go here for the commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Mike in Maryland. Until then, aloha, America. We'll be right back.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
We will not go down in Gaza. tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm watching the chat room, and somebody mentioned I never did address the issue of where is Joe Biden right now? And you need to remember that it is traditional for the vice president to sort of pull back and let the president have the focus. It was only in the 8 years of George W. Bush that we saw a vice president who was out there in front as much as the president himself, and that, of course, was Dick Cheney. Normally, the vice president is supposed to stand in the background. He's the emergency replacement. And his official job, at least, is really just to be president of the Senate. And as John Adams himself wrote, it's the most boring job in the world to sit there and just listen to the senators argue back and forth, because the vice president doesn't even get to vote unless there is a tie. So what Biden may or may not really be doing in the background, you know, we don't know. We probably ought to be keeping an eye on him, but as we should on all of them. Now, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Mike in Maryland. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I may want to talk briefly about the anti-war rally that I went to recently last weekend.
Please do.
Okay, but I mainly wanted to tell you the initial story reason I called is because, I live in Maryland, and there's a representative or maybe a senator, Cardin, I think maybe a representative from Maryland, a female senator, I'm not sure what her first name is, Senator Cardin, is proposing legislation to make it possible for newspapers and maybe other media outlets to declare themselves 501c3. I don't know if you've heard about that. You've been talking about it on a local talk radio.
I heard about it. Basically, the corporate media is in serious financial trouble. I was going to cover a story a little bit later. They're now talking about a corporate media bailout because the traditional newspapers and radio stations and TV networks are such a vital resource to the national security. In other words, the Ministry of Propaganda.
Sure.
And they're failing commercially for reasons that I mentioned when we were talking with Sasha before. And so now they're looking for a bailout. They'll probably get it, obviously. But if they're turned into a 501c3, they're going to have to change the rulings on there because 501c3 has some very strict rules regarding political advocacy.
Sure.
And so these news media organizations are going to be called to task by activists like yours truly anytime they show any kind of bias anywhere in their reporting. And we'll be going to court and say, let's take away their tax-exempt status.
Yeah, no, and I jump for joy when I see newspapers going into business because, like I say, there's nothing more but propaganda. But I hope that 501c3 thing doesn't go through. But I went to the anti-war rally. I'm a member of DC911truth.org, and
mm-hmm.
we spread the truth about 9/11. Being an inside job. So about a half dozen of us from our 9/11 truth group went down there, and we had 9/11 inside job, posters and stuff. And so I was walking along the route from the Capitol building to the Pentagon, and this guy, I don't know if he was Asian provocateur or just some nut, but he started running up towards one of the buildings, and then he pulled out a claw hammer and smashed this big window. And before I could do anything or say anything, the guy ran back off. Of course, his face is covered. So that's the only fault. That was the only violent act I saw there.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a whole bunch of state troopers there, dressed up in the Darth Vader outfits, and there were several of them were filming the crowd. So I walked up, put my face right in front of the camera. I said, "My name is Mike Cunningham,"
mm-hmm.
And then I yelled out that the CIA is a corrupt organization. I just had to put in my 2 cents.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't know. Have you ever gotten a copy of the Rock Creek Free Press?
No.
Puts it out. It's a great newspaper. Maybe I'll send you a copy or something, some copies.
Would love to have it, very much so. As far as your gentleman in the covered face with the claw hammer, that has all the hallmarks of a staged incident so that the media can then report that the activists were violent, there was property damage, and oh, those terrible people. And nothing new with this. If you go back and you study the history of COINTELPRO, I came out of the Vietnam generation. And I was involved in the anti-war movement, And we had those people coming in all the time, FBI undercover informants. And, yes, the FBI has them on every campus in America to this very day. And when they get out of school and they go into business, they stay part of the network. The FBI has a larger network of informants among the American people than the Stasi had in East Germany under the rule of the communists. And that is just an absolute fact of today. And they will use these people to create confusion, disruption, to feed in false information, to double-cross. Every dirty trick in the book they can think of playing, they will play, and it's okay with them because it's for the good of the nation, and it's for the national security. And they just tell themselves all these lies that, you know, they're behaving in a way which would be a crime for any ordinary citizen, but it's okay for them to do so because their motives are so pure and so noble, and nobody could ever construe anything they do as inherently supporting evil in any way. But they do this kind of stuff all the time. I remember one of the big stinks back, again, going back to Vietnam. There was this protest organized by the FBI informants on Southern California college campuses. They were going to have, we were told, a peaceful anti-Vietnam War, pro-peace march, along Harbor Boulevard outside the Disneyland Park in Anaheim. And once we got down there, all the buses and everybody arrived at the day, once we got there, the organizers started getting everybody all cranked up and saying they're not paying attention, they're not paying attention, they're not even slowing down. The news media has refused to come in and cover our peace protest. Let's make a statement. And they led everybody inside the park, over the turnstiles, nobody bought a ticket, and the organizers, the people who had said we're going to have a peaceful protest, are in there knocking over trash cans and they're whooping on the little costume characters. And, of course, the police then show up. The media shows up. The next day it was all over the newspapers of America how those darned dirty hippies had beat up on Mickey Mouse. And in a single move, the credibility of the so-called peace movement was utterly destroyed, which allowed Vietnam to continue for two more years with 60,000 Americans dead. Then in the 1970s, somebody leaked the files on the FBI's COINTELPRO to the press. Huge scandal. When they found out all the things the FBI had been doing, which included setting up this phony riot at Disneyland. All the organizers on all the college campuses who'd been saying we're going to have a peaceful march were FBI informants. And the whole thing was set up and run out of the Richard Nixon's White House specifically to derail the peace movement in the media, to give the media an excuse to say, oh, those peaceniks, they're really not all that peaceful, are they? Look at all the damage. They beat up on Mickey Mouse, you know. And this was the heyday when they were, like, printing up the Black Panther coloring book, which came from the FBI, not from the Black Panthers, and just all kinds of dirty tricks. And this is the way they have habitually, historically operated, to try and just keep American people at each other's throats, to keep us confused, to delay the formation of consensus. The good news is, of course, now that everybody pretty much knows how this stuff is done. If you go to a peace march today, there's usually a little briefing ahead of time, which warns you if you see somebody who appears to be trying to cause trouble, they're probably a plant from the government, and you need to isolate them and back away and just say that's a government agent provocateur. They've caught police officers masquerading as disruptive protesters and agents provocateurs. So this kind of stuff goes on all the time. So, yeah, this guy who came out of nowhere wearing a mask, ran up, broke a window, and then vanished again. Yeah, that's obviously a plant from probably local police officer. I mean, it's kind of an amateurish way to be doing these kind of things, so I'm going to say it's probably a local police officer. But it gives the media the excuse to say those dissenters and protesters, they were breaking property. And that means they don't have to look at the questions you are legitimately raising about 9/11.
Yeah, I know. Well, and so he looked young. He could have been a teenager. I wish it was faster on my feet, figuratively and literally, because maybe I would have tried to make a citizen's arrest or something, you know?
No, you would have gotten hit with a hammer.
Or give the guy a beatdown, you know?
No, just take their picture and post it on the Internet. Mike, thank you very much for the phone call. We've got to let you go here. We've got a commercial break. We'll be back with the last segment of our show after these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Last segment today. Wow, what a show. Thanks to everybody who called in. You make for a much better show. Thanks to Sasha Solanas from the International Solidarity Movement. It was a wonderful, wonderful interview coming from Israel. Now, to kind of follow up on some of the things we were talking about before, where this so-called New World Order and this clash of civilizations is really a war of banking systems. The Western-style compound interest usury system versus the lending at a flat fee Islamic banking system. And when they talk about the New World Order, what they're talking about is imposing upon the world a Federal Reserve type debt-based monetary system where the people who own this global reserve bank are just printing up the money and loaning it to you at interest, the way the system we have here in the United States right now, the system which has brought, which was once the most powerful nation on earth, to the brink of absolute total ruin. They want to take that system that has reduced us all to debt slaves, and the debt is being piled onto us faster than we can ever possibly hope to pay it off. We talk about that gentleman who was on the phone earlier today. He's waiting tables. He's down to like $1,100 a month he's making. He's trying to raise a family. The government has poured $40,000 on his head in the last 6 months, $40,000 onto his wife's head in the last 6 months, $40,000 onto his two-year-old son's head in the last 6 months. That's $120,000 right there of tax debt he's going to have to pay off, for which he will receive nothing in benefits. And it's just completely out of control. And yet this is the system that the bankers want to impose on the entire world via the New World Order. Now, I disagree with Tony. I don't think Israel is going to be sacrificed in this goal towards destroying the Islamic banking system in the Islamic world. Quite the contrary, I am convinced that when they start talking about a new global governance system, that we are going to see a suggestion that it be headquartered in Jerusalem. And I think that's one of the reasons why there is this escalation by Israel to simply grab Jerusalem for themselves in clear defiance of international law and the United Nations, because everything is location, location, location. And their long-term agenda is that Jerusalem will be not only the capital of Israel, it'll be the capital of the world. And that's going to be a very pricey piece of real estate. And we'll see what's going to happen there. Meanwhile, the people of the world, the people of the United States, people like Tony and Redbeard and Mike and you and your sister and your brother and everybody you know, we have to realize, as I was telling Patricia, that lady who called in a month ago, I think, about her circumstance, we did not create this situation. It was created for us. All this debt is being piled on us. It's going to be taken from us in taxes, and yet nobody has shown us the contract that we the people signed saying that we would cover these loans. Nobody's ever shown any of us a contract where we agreed to pay back the loans the government is taking out to give all this money to the banking cartels. And at some point, we the people are going to have to say, no, we're not going to pay it back anymore. And on that day, when the message gets out to the rest of the world that we're not going to cover the U.S. government's bad debt or the U.S. corporations' bad debts, that's when it's finally going to start coming apart. Now, Completely different story. This actually relates back to what we were talking about, the corporate media destroying its own credibility with their bias towards Israel and the reason that Cass Led turned into such a public relations disaster, not only for Israel, but for the American corporate media, which stood there with a considerable amount of egg on their face over this whole situation. Right now, the U.S. ranks 36th in freedom of the press in the world. Remember when the U.S. was supposedly the moral leader for freedoms? You know, we're so free, the terrorists hate us for it. Well, studies are showing that as the years have gone by since 2001 and 9/11, that our press is less and less free. It is more subordinate to government control. We know during the invasion of Iraq and subsequent months, that U.S. military propagandists were working right in CNN's newsroom. We covered that here at whatreallyhappened.com. And as time goes on, we are seeing the government and the economically powerful trying to subvert the media more and more to their wishes. And the irony is, the more they do it, and the more obvious it becomes, the more the media-consuming public are turning to alternative media. They're turning to networks like GCN. They're turning to hosts like Alex Jones. They're turning to websites like whatreallyhappened.com because they want to go where they're going to find the truth. And they don't want to sit there doing business with institutions they know lied to them. I think, you know, I was talking with my wife during the break, and I said, wars are won and lost long before that final battle. And I think future historians are going to look back and realize that the dictatorship that has come to roost in the United States faced its watershed moment, the watershed moment when its fate was ultimately sealed, when it became known to the general public that we had been lied to about Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons in Iraq, because it was at that point that the American people finally had to face up to the fact and confront the reality that our government does lie to the people on very important things, and the corporate media helps them do it. And ever since then, we keep seeing it. Newspapers are going out of business. Radio stations are having to let people go. TV news departments are having to scale back their operations. As the last caller said, they're talking about, trying to give media organizations, the officially blessed media organizations, tax-exempt status so that they can continue to operate despite the fact that they're losing money hand over fist. We're hearing about a mainstream media bailout program because they're not able to make any money. The advertisers are leaving. The advertisers are coming over here to the Internet and the alternative media because this is where the audience is. And we're probably going to see more and more operations by the U.S. government to try and lure people back, trick people back into watching the TV networks and the newspapers and the controlled and owned radio stations. Again, MSNBC, for the last hour, solid, has been doing nothing but running the show about child sexual predators on the Internet. They are so terrified that they're going to lose their ability to control the American people. Because the instant the government cannot lie effectively to the people, they can no longer control them. Everyone always talks about mind control, you know, mind control. And it's miscategorized as people wearing tinfoil hats on their heads and stuff like this, which is a very funny joke. But the reality is that mind control isn't a ray gun, and it's not drugs, and it's not strange waves coming out of your cable TV box. All mind control is controlling the brain by controlling what it knows. And for decades, the U.S. public has been lied into war after war after war of their own free will because the corporate media will only tell you that information, which would lead you to conclude of your own free will to go along with whatever the government wants to do. Well, that monopoly has been broken. The alternative media, GCN, What Really Happened, the blogosphere in general, we now have a larger audience than newspapers. We have a larger audience than talk radio on the conventional, the big corporate-owned radio stations. And more of the AM and FM broadcasters are carrying these shows, the alternative shows. We picked up another couple of affiliates on this show, one in Minneapolis and one in Madison, Wisconsin. Special shout-out to you guys listening today. And we're catching up on TV. And when we cross TV, when more people are coming to the Internet, and the alternative media for their political news than they are going to the TV networks, it's really all over. It is irrevocably over. When the government can't lie to us anymore, they can't control us, and it's all over. They can't start telling the truth. Unfortunately, the U.S. government and the corporate media are in the same boat. They can't start telling the truth because then they have to admit they've been lying all along. And it is for this reason I am convinced that the U.S. government is going the way of the former USSR. And I think that's why they're grabbing all the money and putting it in their pockets and skedaddling for the borders. Speaking of skedaddling, the music means it's time for me to skedaddle out of here, and my wife and I are going to head on out and enjoy this wonderful weekend weather here on the island of Oahu. And it looks like we're going to get a little rain, but I'm sure we'll be fine. Meanwhile, we'll be back. Monday night at 5 p.m. here on GCN. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, a lot of road rage out there, and aloha, America.